it'd be really helpful if you haven't got a Bible, to be able to see a Bible. So if you haven't got one, please try and get one to hand, and stick your hand up if you need to get one, someone might be able to bring one over. Okay, well, welcome again to BC3, especially if you're a visitor. It's great to have you with us. If you've been here over the last few weeks, you'll know we've been going through a series in the Gospel of Matthew. One of the Gospels, one of the books about Jesus' life. We've been looking at a passage in that book where Jesus is sending his disciples out on a mission. And we've been thinking about what's our mission as a church, what are we here to do? We're here to share the good news of Jesus with people. But this morning, we're taking a break from that series. We're taking a step back. I think sometimes it's easy to sort of lose the wood for the trees, and we can think so much about what we're meant to be doing and how we can share Jesus with people. And we forget why we're meant to be doing it and what the good news is. Okay, so this morning we're going to take a break, take a step back, and think about what is Christianity all about? What is it all about? I think people in our culture tend to sort of hold Christianity at arm's length a bit. I don't know if you experience that. I think some people are just cynical. They think Christianity is a sort of a crutch for the weak, something that people just invent to help themselves out when they're in trouble. Some people are suspicious of Christianity. They think it's a kind of a cult. They think they're going to be brainwashed. They've experienced perhaps abuses of power by Christian leaders, and they're suspicious. A few people you might meet who are actively opposed to Christianity, the Richard Dawkins and his followers of this world. Christianity is a poison. Religion ruins everything. I think a lot of people just aren't interested. They think, oh, it's not really relevant for me. And whatever people's reaction, one thing in common is that if you try and bring Jesus up in a conversation, he's generally an awkward intruder. Okay, so in my company, my group at work, we have coffee breaks in the morning. We all trip off to the kitchen, have a coffee together and chat, because we're engineers, we don't talk while we're working. Okay, we just talk in the kitchen. So we have conversations in the kitchen, and they all know I'm a Christian. And I try and look out for opportunities in those conversations to talk about my faith and talk about Jesus. It doesn't come up very much, but occasionally it does. But whenever I bring up, say, something that God's been doing in my life, something I've done at the weekend, I mention Jesus, immediately there's this kind of, like, awkwardness or just tension. People are on edge. People don't like talking about him. I think the vast majority of people have dismissed Christianity and Jesus based on misunderstandings about who he is and about what Christianity is about. So what I'm going to try and do this morning is address some of those misunderstandings. Okay? And we're going to answer two big questions this morning. Question number one, what is being a Christian all about? What's it all about? I think, I suspect, if you were to ask most people that question, they'd answer in terms of lifestyle. So, kind of think of acts of devotion, like going to church and praying, I don't know, lighting a candle or something. Or they'd think in terms of keeping rules. So, not drinking too much, not swearing, trying to be a nice person. It's all in terms of stuff that we do. Is that really true? Is that really what it's all about? That's the first question. Second question we're going to look at, perhaps more fundamental than that, is what is God like? That's a really important question, because it determines our answer to the first question. And again, I suspect, if you ask most people, what do you think God is like? They would say something like a cosmic policeman. They wouldn't use those words, but he's out there, he's kind of checking up on you, you know, to make sure you're good. So we were having a conversation in our home group last week about the way that you can be singled out for being a Christian, and people know you're a Christian, they make comments, and one guy shared a comment that someone made, are you a Christian? You've got the Eye of Gondor watching you now, you better be careful what you do. I think people do see God like that, don't they? They think he's kind of watching out, looking for when you make mistakes. He's this cosmic policeman. Is he really like that? And I say, our view of God determines what we think it means to follow him, doesn't it? So if you think God's a cosmic policeman, you're going to think Christianity is about following rules, aren't you? So Islam is a great example of this. So Allah is he's the supreme power, and he demands obedience. That's what he is all about. So Islam is about following the rules. It's about submission and getting the reward for being good. And I think a lot of people think Christianity and Islam pretty much the same. It's the same God, but they understand him in a different way, a different set of rules, but it's pretty similar. But the passage we're going to look at this morning, in John chapter 13, says Christianity and Islam could not be more different. They could not be more different. And we're going to look this morning at how this passage answers both those questions. What is being a Christian all about? And what is God like? Okay, we're going to answer the second question first, because that informs the first question, and that's the way the passage does it. So, okay, let's have a look down. John 13, question number one. We're going to look at first, what is God like? So, verse 1. It was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that his time had come to leave the world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. Okay, we're diving into John here, so we need a bit of context. The Passover is a festival in the Jewish calendar. It's a very important festival. The Jews in first century Palestine, when Jesus lived, used to go from the towns and villages, go to Jerusalem to celebrate this festival together with family and friends. That's where Jesus is. He's in a private room with a group of his close friends about to celebrate the Passover festival together. And Jesus knows the time has come for him to leave the world. Again, if we'd read the other Gospels and got some concepts, we'd know Jesus, over the last few months before this event, has been predicting his death to his disciples quite a few times, in quite a lot of detail. He said, this is going to happen to me, I'm going to die in this way, and then I'll rise again. So he knows it's going to happen, and he knows it's coming, it's on the edge of being about to happen. Now, if you watch films and read history, you'll know, you get these kind of end-of-life moments where someone knows they're about to die, and they're speaking to the people who are going to be alive after them, and those moments have this kind of weight about them, they have a sort of significance. So you think of the king who's about to die, he's on his deathbed, and he's surrounded by his sort of courtiers, and they're all anxious, waiting, what's he going to say? That moment has a real significance about it. So Jesus knows he's going to die, and he loves his disciples, and we learn verse 1, he loves them to the end. So we're thinking, okay, he's going to do something significant here, what's about to happen? Verse 2, the evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. So Judas is going to hand Jesus over to the authorities, and the devil has already put it in his heart and to do this. So it's like the die is cast, that the path is mapped out, it's just going to happen now. So the tension is kind of mounting as we know what's around the corner. And then we read verse 3, this incredible glimpse into Jesus' divine status. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. The Father has put all things under Jesus' power. Like Laura was mentioning at the start, that the God who created the stars and the heaven has put all things under Jesus' power. Incredible authority delegated to this man, Jesus. So he can do what he wants. And he's come from God, and he's returning to God. So we know his true home is in heaven with his Father. He is God. It's an incredible position, a divine status. So what's he going to do? What's he going to do? He's about to leave the world. He knows he's going to die. He's in this room, behind closed doors, with his closest friends. What's his final speech going to be? Is he going to display his true identity in all his glory to give his disciples this inspiration when he's gone? It's tension. So let's find out what happens. Verse 4. So Jesus got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. It's totally unexpected. And in this culture, it would have been a massive shock for Jesus to do this. So first century Palestine, the common footwear of the day was sandals. It's dry and dusty, it's hot. When you're in a hot country and you're wearing sandals, your feet get dirty and they get sweaty. Okay, it's a bit hard to imagine now we're in October and it's a bit cold, the nights are drawing in. But if you can think back to those 4 weeks we enjoyed in June, July, where it was just baking hot every day. I was wearing sandals to work, it was brilliant. But I tell you, at the end of the day, there's no way I'm getting into bed without washing my feet first, okay? if you're wearing sandals in a hot day, it's not pleasant what happens to your feet. Well, mine anyway. So as a good Middle Eastern host in that day, when he gets guests into his house, would have provided a basin of water to wash your feet, and possibly a servant to wash them for you. And that would have been especially important before a communal meal, where they'd be reclining at table, and so the feet would be fairly obvious. So we've got here verse 2, the evening meal was being served. So the food's coming out on the table, and their feet aren't washed. This is an awkward situation, it's uncomfortable for them. And we know again from the other Gospels that just a few days, possibly hours previously, the disciples have been arguing amongst themselves about who's the greatest. So their concern at this point in time is with their own status. So it didn't occur to them to wash each other's feet. That would never even cross their minds. But Jesus, their master, gets up, takes off his outer garment, goes up and fills a basin, and goes around to each one of them, getting on his knees, getting his hands dirty, wiping the grime off, drying them with a towel. The disciples must have been stunned. It's not meant to happen like that. He's their master. But for us, who know verse 3, it's even more stunning. Jesus has all things under his power. He's come from God, and he's returning to God. He's the one who reveals to us most clearly what God is like. And what does he do? He does this. He washes feet. And the point is this. God's very nature is humility. His very nature is to serve and to love. He is totally different to what people think. Now, the fact that we find this surprising, I think, shows that we don't really get what God is like. So God is Trinity. God is Father, Son and Spirit, united in love. God is not one person. God has always been loving the other. He has always been giving himself. So it's entirely consistent that Jesus, when he comes, would wash feet. He's revealing, in doing that, the very heart of God. And this God could not be more different from Allah, who is alone and is power hungry. This God, the true God, is not greedy for glory, but he's overflowing with love. He's not a demander, he's a giver. We know that because of Jesus, the final revelation of God's nature. The one person who could rightfully demand to be served by mankind instead comes to serve mankind, including you and including me. Now, see, the washing feet here, this is just a sign. This is just a little pointer to something far greater, something far more humble and far more powerful. One of my favourite verses in the Bible, I've been thinking about this verse quite a lot recently, is Mark chapter 10, verse 45. It's on the screen there. It says this, "For even the Son of Man," that's Jesus, "did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." So a few days later, after this happens, Jesus is going to be arrested. He's going to allow himself to be tried and beaten and condemned to death. He's going to walk outside the city carrying a wooden beam on his shoulders. And he's going to do that as a ransom for many. So humanity is in a hopeless situation. As we've thought about already this morning, we are slaves to sin. Our hearts, we turn away from God and we reject him. And there's nothing we can do to fix our problem. And God has passed the sentence on us already. He's passed the sentence on sin. He says, the result is death. And that's a right sentence. We are under that sentence. There's nothing we can do to save ourselves. What we need is someone to come from outside and save us. We need someone to pay the penalty for us, to take the sentence that we deserve. And when Jesus goes to the cross, that is what he does. As he dies, he is taking that sentence on himself. He is bearing on his shoulders the sins of the world, your sins and my sins. And he offers to anyone who will receive it an exchange. He says, I will take your death and you have my life. He says, I will take your hell and you have my heaven. He says, I will take your alienation from God and you can have my intimacy with the Father. See, God is not a demander. God is a giver. God has given his Son so that we can have life. It's the ultimate act of self-giving. Jesus came not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. Now this is so good. This is so good. The self-giving love is the subject of so much great literature and art. You can't trip over, can't read a novel without tripping over some heroic act of noble self-sacrifice. And we're drawn to those things. We're attracted to them. The reason is, this comes from the very heart of God. This is what God is like. He is so good. He's primarily a God who gives, not a God who demands. So we've seen Jesus revealing the character of God. What is God like? And now we're going to see the disciples' response to what Jesus does. And that's the answer to our second question. What is being a Christian all about? So question two, what is being a Christian all about? So Peter in verse 6, he struggles with this a bit. He says, Jesus comes to Simon Peter, who says to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Peter doesn't want this to happen. It kind of feels wrong to him. He's thinking, "You're my master. I'm supposed to be serving you. You're not supposed to be serving me." And Jesus says, verse 7, "You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you'll understand." He says, "I know it feels strange that I'm serving you. I know it feels weird, but just trust me. This is how it has to work. You'll understand later." But Peter's having none of it. Verse 8, "No, you shall never wash my feet." He's still resisting. He doesn't get it. So Jesus just lays it out for him as clearly as he can. Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." What is being a Christian all about? Being a Christian is primarily about receiving from God. This is a really key insight. It makes sense. If God is primarily a giver, following him is primarily about receiving from him. So what do we receive from God? How does this work in our lives? The disciples, what they received was their feet being washed. I think it's clear that being a Christian doesn't involve having your feet washed by Jesus. He's not here to do that now. So what is it that we receive? Well, as we've seen, the foot washing is symbolic of something far deeper and far more profound. It's symbolic of Jesus' death on our behalf. And that is what we receive. That is what being a Christian means. That's what it's all about. Receiving Jesus' death on your behalf. Simply accepting that offer. Your sin for my life. Your hell for my heaven. Your alienation for my intimacy. It's just humbly saying yes. Coming to the end of yourself and saying, "Yeah, I need you. I can't deal with my sin." Accepting who you are. Accepting your brokenness. Saying, "I need you to take it." And that's it. That's it. It could not be more different from Islam. It could not be more different from any worldly religion. Worldly religion says, do. It says, you need to do this to please God. Christianity says, it's done. Jesus has done it. All you have to do is accept him and receive him. It sounds simple, doesn't it? But actually, this is easier said than done. Because we find it hard. Something in us as humans finds it really hard to be given stuff for free. So yesterday I was at a community event and someone offered me a cup of tea and I said no. It wasn't because I didn't want a cup of tea. I didn't mind. I wasn't feeling strongly either way. It was because I didn't want to be served. I didn't want them to do something for me. You must find this all the time. You need something. You need to borrow something from a friend and they lend it to you and then they say just have it. Just keep it. There's something in you that doesn't want to receive grace, is there? You want to pay them back. You want to give them back what they lent to you, or either give them money. We don't like being sort of charity cases. And I think the fact that the message of Christianity is receive a gift for free, I think it actually turns people away a lot of the time because it's almost too good to be true. A while back, I was in China on a work trip, and I was working with a colleague over there, and I knew he'd had some conversations with another colleague of his who's a Christian in their office. So we got talking about Jesus, had a good conversation about Christianity, what it means to be a Christian. And his problem with Christianity was, it's too good. It's too good to be true. You can't just have eternal life just by believing. Surely that's... He actually said the words, it's too good to be true. I think it holds people back sometimes. And I think it's hard to accept grace, not just when you come to Jesus for the first time, but even as you continue in the Christian life. I think often Christians, we don't get this as well. We don't get that being a Christian is primarily about receiving from Jesus. We think, we come into the faith by grace, our sins are forgiven by grace, but after that, we kind of need to meet certain standards. We've got to do certain things to keep God happy or to please him. And then being a Christian becomes primarily about doing stuff. So we read the Bible in the morning thinking, what does God want me to do for him today? And our Christian life becomes all about activity. And we lose the joy of our salvation. It's a burden. Jesus came not to be served, but to serve. Being a Christian is primarily about receiving what he's done for you. It's done in Jesus. Unless I wash you, you have no part with me. So here's an idea. Why not try reading the Bible in the morning thinking, not what does God want me to do for him, but what has God done for me in Jesus? And worship him for it. And you'll find as you do that, as you receive Jesus freely and joyfully, that joy will overflow in love for others. And you'll find yourself doing good. And you'll find yourself wanting to please him. And you'll find yourself wanting to serve others. But not because God demands it from you, but because God has given Jesus to you. It makes all the difference. So Jesus says, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. And these words, they hit Peter like a hammer blow. I think verse 8, the penny drops for him. He's suddenly like, oh, I just need to receive. That's what it's about. So verse 9, typical response from Peter. He says, then Lord, just not my feet, but my hands and my head as well. We see him like this all the way through the gospel. He's kind of impulsive. He's sort of extravagant and over the top. And Jesus responds, okay, hold on. Verse 10, a person who has had a bath, you don't need to wash his feet. His whole body is clean. He's saying, don't get too hung up on the washing thing, right? It's just a sign. Don't worry about your hands and your head. It's just a sign about something internal. Something that's happening in your heart. He says, and you are clean, though not every one of you. And here's where we see the sword turning. Because Judas, the one who is going to betray him, is still in the room. Judas is one of the ones who has had his feet washed by Jesus. His feet were washed externally, but he was unclean because of what was inside. You see, deep in Judas's heart, something had turned away from Jesus. He was lured away by the love of money. It's so tragic. He'd watched Jesus. He'd watched him loving people and healing people and teaching and having compassion. He watched him wash his own feet, and he walked out the door and handed him over for a bit of money. And the really sobering thing for us in all this is that Judas looked no different from any of the other disciples. If you've got a Bible, just have a look down at verse 21 and 22. After he'd said this, Jesus was troubled in spirit and testified, I tell you the truth, one of you is going to betray me. His disciples stared at one another, at a loss to know which of them he meant. So Jesus says, one of you is going to betray me, that there's no obvious candidate. We kind of think of Judas as this evil guy who was sort of scheming in the background. It was pretty obvious it was him, but it wasn't at all. He looked good from the outside. He looked like everyone else. And that leads us to another really important insight about what being a Christian is all about. We've seen from Peter, it's primarily about receiving. And we see from Judas what it is not about. Being a Christian is not about being good on the outside. It's not about looking good. It's what's happening on the inside that matters. Because Judas looked good on the outside. He looked like all the other disciples. He was saying and doing all the right things. It doesn't matter what you do on the outside. Jesus says you're clean or you're unclean based on what's happening in your heart. In your heart, if you're aware of your need, if you've come to the end of yourself, you know you're a sinner, and you just gratefully receive Jesus, you just let him wash you, like Peter, you're clean. But if in your heart you think you're okay, you think you don't need Jesus, and you kind of prefer doing other things, you're not really that interested in him as a person, if you're rejecting him, like Judas, then you're unclean. You can be saying and doing all the right things. You can be coming to church. You can be being a good person. Even reading your Bible. But if you're living independently from Jesus, you're not a Christian. Maybe that's you this morning. Maybe you've always thought you were a Christian because you're doing good and you're at church, right? Maybe, as I've been speaking, you've realised that you're not a Christian. Well, the good news is that this offer is open to all. No matter what you've done, no matter how much you have rejected Jesus, no matter how you feel about him, his death is for you. His death is for all. And maybe you've never received Jesus in your heart. You're realising that you've never done that. And you can do it today. The offer is open. There is still time. Or maybe you're realising as I'm speaking about what God is like and about what being a Christian is about. You're realising you've dismissed Christianity without really understanding it. You haven't really looked into it. You've just gone on misunderstandings or stereotypes. If that's you, I really encourage you, investigate it further. Mark said earlier, we've got a Christianity Explore course starting week after next. Sign up for that. Speak to Steve afterwards. Have a look into Jesus, who he really is. Don't write him off without really understanding him. See, Christianity is not what people think it is. Christianity is good news. The gospel means good news. It's the good news that God is not like you think he is. He's a giver, he's not a demander. It's the good news that being a Christian is not what you thought it was. It's not about keeping rules, it's about loving and trusting the God who has given himself for you. And it's the good news that Jesus has offered to you, whatever you've done and wherever you're at. Let's have a moment of quiet and then the band will come back up and play.